Welcome back, listeners, to another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Game of Thrones, Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night. On this episode, we're going to be talking moments of heroism and paying tribute to our fallen soldiers. We're going to be talking battle tactics and finding purpose for the characters. Do they have their destiny fulfilled? Do they still have one left? Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Bum 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 bum. Hello, everybody watching and listening at home. I'm your host, Ryan Malotti, and I'm joined by, well, the best panel you could ask for. Let me introduce them real quick. We have to my left a news journalist whose unhealthy obsession with Game of Thrones actors, both on and off the show, makes her a perfect panelist for this panel. Her name is Anna K. Targaryen.
Hi, guys. Nice to see you guys again.
Down the row, we have a USC professor who, for this particular episode, spent hours studying Sun Tzu's Art of War. And so he's perfect for this panel. His name is Jeremy Giantsbane. Yes.
It's all about the strategery.
Oh, the strategery. Indeed, and we will get into it. And to his left is the perpetually lovely Lady of the North. She has warlocks in her families and has been a co-host on this show for many, many years. Please introducing Kristen Elizabeth Stock. Yes.
Thank you. I have warlocks in my family because I'm from a circus family, which I'm making a documentary about.
Amazing.
So they're not just like warlocks. I'm not just like living in the house of the undying, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm from a circus family.
It's not the house of black and white. It's like the house of brown and gray.
No, come on. We live in there circus tents.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you, Steve. You know, you can always tell when it's a joke when he does that. guys, you know what? Let's just jump right out of the gate here for this episode. What's your overall thoughts, favorite moments? Like, what happened in this episode that stood out that you really want to talk about right out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is a quieter moment, but I love Grey Worm and Jon stepping into their own, finally realizing there's a bigger purpose, and it's not just what's immediately in front of you. Grey Worm leaving his troops when he knows it's time to draw the bridge.
That moment, knowing
that he can't save them. You can see him wanting to, but I really see that he's had such growth in his character. And then Jon walking past Sam as Sam's being attacked by the Whites. Another great moment of Jon realizing there's a greater purpose to what I'm trying to do here. So, fantastic.
Perfect.
This show is not sparing the children. So we have Lady Lyanna Mormont, not that her death is a favorite moment, but her continuing badassery. I mean, from her opening scenes coming on Bear Island in the court to everything she did in the King of the North speech and all of those things, she just, in her, what, maybe 8 to 10 scenes had just total attitude, total facial expressions, and was a total hero and badass.
Well, very I don't cool. really believe you guys, because I think the best moment of the show was when Arya comes and drops the dagger down to the other hand and stabs the Night King and shatters like glass.
You just reenacted that. That was good.
She's a Stark after all.
Oh my
Kristen
God.
Stark.
We're all sitting there watching. By the way, you can go ahead and check out our watch along. You can watch us watch the episode live on youtube.com/AfterBuzzTVSciFi and AfterBuzzTV.com.
I've been reading a bunch of your reviews on iTunes.
Have you now?
And some of them are nice. Thank you.
Yay.
But some of them are not so nice. Like, they got really mad at me last week when I said that Jon couldn't be burned. Because, okay, everyone makes a mistake here and then, but like, I watched that episode very recently, and I didn't see wraps on his hand. Apparently you guys did, and Jeremy said he heard it sizzle. So it happens, but somebody really criticized me in the iTunes comments for saying that he wasn't really hurt by that. But I didn't really feel like he was, and obviously he's a Targaryen. So, you know, like, you guys, just, you're rating us, you're subscribing. If you want to participate in the conversation on YouTube, you can see if you leave a comment. We always reply to a lot of those comments. It's really fun for us. But don't forget to give us a thumbs up. Leave us those positive reviews on iTunes. We're getting a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
And we're rotating hosts. I think you guys like that, getting somebody, a new monitor in here and there. But, you know, we love when you give us those 5-star ratings. It makes us be able to be the ESPN talk of TV. It makes us be able to put on this show for you guys. So keep giving us a thumbs up. If you're listening on iTunes, give us a great rating. We love reading those. We do read them.
We do read them.
I read your comments on YouTube. I love your predictions. So just keep doing that. You can watch us on Apple Podcasts, on YouTube, on iTunes. Where else? There's a bunch of places.
Spotify, Shazam. Yeah, any of your favorite platforms, yeah. You can check us out. Thank you guys for your continued support. We obviously read the comments.
I read them, and they make us feel things.
They make us feel feelings. So, but honestly, they're really, I've read through those comments on our videos, on these videos here, and you guys, there's really no better forum or better place to have a really engaging insight into the Game of Thrones fandom. Mm-hmm. I mean, this particular fandom for AfterBuzz TV is like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, it blows Reddit out of the water, I'm telling you.
Yes.
So anyway, the reason why, and thank you, and the reason why I brought that up is because on our watch along, you could just see all of us, just like when she drops that night cane,
we're
like, what?
I was actually handling the watch along comments.
Show over?
What were people saying
in the
chat?
Oh my gosh, it was wild. Some people saw the Arya thing coming as soon as, you know, she was with Melisandre. Other people didn't know. Huge moment, though. Our chat blew up. People have been commenting the entire time, which I love because it's really fun to sort of man that.
Mm-hmm.
But it
really
blew
up.
So I'm excited to talk about that later tonight.
Yes.
Let's get into it.
Well, let's get into it. So our first topic of discussion is moments of heroism. And the reason why we're calling it that is because there's a lot of people who met their end. I feel like going into this episode, a lot of the conversation surrounding it was, hey, who do you think is going to die? Mm-hmm. Who's going to die in this episode? And we definitely had a few. So in kind of a chronological order, I guess we'll go ahead and start with Ed.
Aww. He's been with us from season one.
I know.
Yes.
Little cutie.
He rose the ranks from just a scrappy do to Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Right?
Right?
Yeah. And he got some good payoff lines when he showed up at Winterfell to do his role. He kept his watch. He's the last of those guys essentially really in that Night's Watch with the vows and all of that.
He was great. What was that one line he used in season one? Like, join the Night's Watch, dig a lot of holes. What he's talking about?
north of the wall when they're looking for something to burn.
Yeah, they got nothing to do but dig holes. Just dig some holes. But Ed, they're going to be digging one for you. Actually, no, they're probably going to burn them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We saw those pyres lit up.
Yeah, right at the end.
In the preview.
Thank you for your service, Ed.
And now his watch is ended.
His watch ended. It was nice to see him, like you were saying, Jeremy, really standing up to the bitter end with Sam. The two guys sort of left that we really care about from the Night's Watch, and I just thought it was a very fitting ending for him, while not being exaggerating, but paid homage to his service in the show.
Do you, what do you think the future is for the Night's Watch, considering that the Night King has been destroyed and the wall has kind of been broken down and the Lord Commander is dead? I mean, is there a future for the Night's Watch?
Hopefully we don't need it, but it sounds like 10,000 years ago, the White Walkers, there was another war with them. So hopefully they won't come back. Hopefully this is the end of them, but don't know if we can say for sure because history does repeat itself.
Well, in the near term, there's a lot of real estate up there that's unmanned because Jon brought everyone back. We remember his line from a couple of episodes ago saying, no reason to stay up there. So he pulled them back. So they're either no one's with the Night King now, but they're either at Winterfell or maybe journeying back home.
Exactly.
So I guess we're going to have to see who takes up command of the Crows. If there is going to be one.
If there is that.
I love, though, that we have had the wall because it's basically like, I don't like our prison system in, you know, America and how they just all sit in cells. And basically, you know, prisoners got to go to the wall and serve. And they were taught skills that they wouldn't normally and they were made use of for, you know, a bigger purpose. And so I actually really liked that. So hopefully their new political structure involves something where, you know, if you've committed a crime and you've been outlawed, there's somewhere for you to go.
Getting topical.
And
awesome.
Yes, and hopefully at this point their main purpose won't be to fight and kill wildlings.
Exactly,
right?
But it's going to become folklore again, in the same way that the Night's Watch, they were like, okay, is there really an army of the dead? Is there, you know, the White Walker, is this mystery? Mm-hmm. So give it a certain amount of time and you're going to have, you know, little Jon Snows or whomever serving at the wall, believing that it was a folklore. So
history is cyclical,
exactly.
Isn't it? Let's pay homage to our next heroine, one of the fan favorites. Miss Lady Mormont.
Jeremy's favorite.
Favorite moment. That's weird, but that's a favorite moment of yours. Jeremy Dance.
Well, it was a notable moment with a lot of action and great character work that's been built up, just how tough as nails that little bear is. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and now we might be looking at the end of that house. So it might not just be the end of her as a character. We're pretty sure we'll get, you know, what happened to Jorah, but it could be the end of that house as we know it.
Yeah. I love the visual of this tiny little human taking on this giant. Yeah. And I think that when you extrapolate that into life, and as I like to do with the show, it really doubles down on this idea of no contribution is too small to the greater good. Mm-hmm. And we all fell in love with her character for her feistiness, her sass, like everything about her. But in this moment, you really start to, I think, you look inward and you think, okay, wow, like we all have some of her inside of all of us.
Definitely. And like just when you thought she was going to go down, mm-hmm. she pulls that dragon glass up and hits him in the eye with it. Like who saw that coming? I mean, she's literally being strangled. This little tiny girl probably doesn't lift a ton of weights, you know what I mean? I don't right. see her like working out in the gym,
right.
but she's got that yeah. heart and, you know, she really took down a giant.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this was foreshadowing, but if you remember back to Battle of the Bastards, Jon essentially took the courtyard and took on Ramsay with a House of Mormont shield. So House of Mormont was the shield for that courtyard and mm-hmm. defended it again.
Now, do we know if that giant happened to be 1-1 or is just a giant?
Like, didn't
do we
look know? Like 1-1. I think yeah. it was just another giant.
If you think you have an opinion on it, please leave us a comment. We'd love to read that. But yeah, it just goes to show that, you know, it doesn't matter your size or stature, but it's your attitude and your tenacity and yep. your willingness to take on the world that could make all the difference.
Yeah, as opposed to when Joffrey was leading. I mean, he wouldn't fight down there like she would with her men. So it just showed how much she was willing to sacrifice and put on the line to be with her people.
It really was a powerful moment. Let's pay tribute to the man who won't be coming back to us. He came back, what, 7 times,
I believe? Oh my gosh. 6.
6?
Yeah.
6 times, and he fell for a 7th. I guess you. I don't know. Well, math is off. Yeah. Beric Dondarrion.
He was raised 6 times. This is his 7th death.
7th death.
Okay. Unlucky number 7.
Right. Yes. The 7-pointed star.
7-pointed star.
But man, did he like drag along his feet down those walls? We're like, oh yeah, Beric's done. Nope, here he comes. He's like waddling through the gate, like and dragging all of his legs. Like I don't even know how he made it through the door, but he did.
Yeah, I know. He stopped for a second. He looked like he was holding them off. We were all like, oh, what a noble sacrifice.
And then he
burst through the
like
door.
That.
Like, what? Oh, nope. He's still going. But he needed to. Well, we thought he was going to say maybe like some last words or something, but he didn't. He just sacrificed himself for Arya. And what a moment of heroism. I mean, that. And it didn't even leave much to the imagination. Like, Melisandre was standing right there saying, yeah, that was his purpose.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of the Willem Dafoe scene from Platoon, if you remember from Platoon,
oh, yeah, yeah,
as really. He is running through the jungle, just getting hit by bullet after bullet, just like Beric was stabbed time after time, and just finally gives it up in that on the cross moment. Beric Dondarrion was almost martyred there in a way, but gave it up big time. I think the people, when they were stabbing, he might not have had any organs left from all of his wounds. So they might have been missing most of the vital organs, but right. give it up for him. He had a big moment and took out a lot. That's his best skill in fighting, I think we've seen him do in the show.
Is taking hits?
No, that hallway fight.
Oh, okay. I mean, it really felt like he was holding himself up with his arms, like his legs had been taken out at that point, and he was like getting through the hallway on his arms. It was insane.
Do we know what happened to his sword? Is that going to be...
Well, he threw it!
Right. Is that going to be is that a relic? Is that something that only he can kind of ignite? Or mm-hmm. is it kind of an enchanted... You know, if you guys know, please let us know. That's
Hopefully
not something I'm
Arya
too familiar
finds
with. With his particular sword.
I would say the Hound.
Oh, that's a great point, yes.
Because he
yes.
convinced Absolutely. The Hound to get over his fear, yep. and it would be kind of symbolic for that flaming sword to be mm-hmm. the Hound's trademark
now.
That'd
be amazing. That's a
amazing. Beautiful thought.
I'd like yes. to see that against his brother.
Yes.
Yes, the Mountain.
Yeah, Clegane Bowl.
He's got the fire now!
I love it. Very cool. So there's still some Beric in possible, you know, storytelling in the future. So he might come back to us in spirit.
Yeah.
well, there's a big group of people who fell for this war, and we should pay tribute to them, the Unsullied. I feel like the Dothraki as well, but it just felt like the Unsullied kind of fell as kind of a unit. It seemed like they were almost one person.
They protected the retreat. I mean, how many people did we see running back through the castle gate, and they just stood their ground? Not a single one of them ran back.
Time and time again, we've seen the Unsullied step up when the time is right, and Grey Worm's leading of them was so fantastic. I touched on it earlier, but I just love Grey Worm, protect the retreat. We have to protect at all costs. There's a bigger war that we're fighting here. It's not about us getting back. It's about protecting the people that are still back and can still fight.
How surprised are you that Grey Worm is still alive?
Shocked. That is like the shocker of the episode, aside from Arya killing the Night King. I'm like, Grey Worm? He's still with us? What? How did this happen?
How did he survive?
He was number one on most everyone's list.
Yeah. Missandei will be very happy. They'll have a night to remember, I'm sure, when she welcomes him back.
On the final tribute to the Unsullied, though, and we see there's still a couple formations of them left. We see them marching through the courtyard in the previews. But Daenerys essentially freed them, says, you've been slaves. Now you're free, your chains are broken. And they all stayed with her and stayed with the cause and stayed for the cause of the living. Think about Stannis' army of sellswords, and with the first couple of bad signs, they just took off and halved, or less than that, took more forces than that before the battle with Ramsay Bolton. These guys stayed the course, and they were pretty amazing. As a character en masse, they were really reliable.
Yeah.
I would say, what else would they go off and do in life, really? That's been their whole life training. Sorry, but I don't see them exactly taking up another trade. I'm not sure. But I do want to pay tribute to
open up
to
a cupcake shop. I don't know.
Okay, join Hot Pie. Go ahead. But the Dothraki, you did touch on it for a second. Mm-hmm. But just that scene where, you know, Melisandre had lit all their swords, and then just seeing them in the distance and all those lights go out, that was like the opening to this war, the Great War, and we were just all shocked.
And what a beautiful cinematic moment, because they didn't hit us over the head with their deaths. Mm-hmm. So what a beautiful thing to see the swords light up, to see the lights go out, and then to see some people running back. Like, I just thought it showed such restraint on the cause of the directors and the writers, and I just thought it was such a beautiful way to really lead into this great war.
When the two forces met, that was like one of the most terrifying scenes.
Terrifying.
I've seen
they built
show
it up.
Ever.
Yeah.
And you didn't even really see anything, right?
And you weren't hearing very much.
Yeah, and the heartbeat music, is that what we were hearing? It was like this, you know.
I don't think at that point.
No, was that a little bit later?
That was definitely later. I mean, at that point, it was sort of silence, and we were just watching.
That was your own heartbeat.
That was your heartbeat.
Yes. The anticipation is a powerful tool, and they executed it brilliantly. Let's go to our next fallen soldier, and our third topic today will be finding purpose, and so some of these themes kind of overlap. We'll talk more in depth as to their destiny and has it ended and has it been fulfilled. But let's talk about the moment of heroism for Theon Greyjoy.
I mean, how many people did he take out with those arrows? I mean, just that scene at the end, we saw hundreds of men he stopped from getting to Bran.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I've been harsh on Theon throughout the entire series. I think that I really had a hard time personally getting over everything with Bran and Rickon. The Reek character line was tough for me. Watching what he did to Sansa, it was tough for me. And I feel like in this moment, I really remembered why Theon is so amazing. I love that Bran welcomes him home. Theon's archery, hello. I mean, it was just, we really get to see him in a battle that's suited for him. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's ironborn, but he's not really like a sailor, fighter. That's not his strong suit. And so we see him, because he spent so much time growing up at Winterfell and being raised with the Starks, we see archery as his main weapon of war. And what an amazing way to see him shine as he's sort of going down to protect Bran.
To the one person who he truly betrayed.
Truly.
And he can finally find some redemption. We've been rooting for that redemption, but for him.
It's also the second time he's looked death in the face, and this time he stayed.
Yes.
Because the last time with his sister, he could have saved her and just ran.
Very good point. He's had an opportunity to look at, you know, and I honestly felt like he might, you know, after Bran said, thank you for, you know, sticking around, You know, it's,
I
thought
for a second. Go ahead and go.
Yeah, I thought for a second Fiona was going to be like, all right, and then just kind of move aside.
You know? I'm with Steven that contrast was the one I think the mm-hmm. writers were going for of in the moment he had to jump, he ran in the face of the battle. And
absolutely.
Another thing is from last season when John said, you're a Greyjoy and a Stark, he mm-hmm. totally lived up to that. Within his last few actions, he had an act of heroism and incredible competence and awesomeness for both of those houses.
Also thinking about the timeline, Theon trying to kill the Night King and failing, and him holding off the army of the dead for Bran gave Arya more time to get to Bran at the
absolutely.
Right moment. So it all just seems so predetermined and preordained via Bran's visions. And I just think that Theon really stepped into his own coming in at the time that he did.
And one final element, we saw him, he's always had the trappings of his title and his birth and that he was a ward of the Starks. But he became a leader. The Ironborn stuck with him, too. They followed him to that place.
Mm-hmm. And he was calling the shots.
Yeah, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. He earned their respect via the knock'em sock'em battle on the beach, and they stuck with him, you know, however many it was, a couple of dozen, mm-hmm. and followed his example, and that was leadership.
Yeah, it seemed like at one point in Theon's arc, or his, you know, his entire story, it was at a certain point, Theon died, Reek was born. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then at another point, Reek died, Theon was born again, and I feel like he finally fell as a true member of both families and as, mm-hmm. as Theon himself.
And he volunteered for this death. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody who volunteered to protect Bran in this particular situation knew their death was coming.
Yeah. Right.
So he wanted to redeem himself, and this was definitely the way to do it.
Just as with Lady Mormont, you know, Theon doing this for Bran shows another sign of one person can have a huge effect, a butterfly effect, in the way that outcomes will occur.
Definitely.
Bran makes sure to remind people about that. let's pay respect.
Everything you've done brought you to this moment.
Many times?
I kind of want to use that
if I had a shot glass for every...
for, like, whenever I do anything wrong, I, like, get pulled over for speeding. You were meant to be here, and so was I. Everything we've ever done led us to this moment. All right, let's pay respects to another fan favorite from you know, episode one, right? No, Jorah Mormont.
So.
Maybe two or three.
Season one.
Jorah Mormont.
Yeah, when Dany arrived to the Dothraki, he was literally her first friend and mm-hmm. her friend throughout. I mean, he's been her number one ally, so seeing him go down was obviously the hardest loss for me out of all the characters who we lost this episode.
Yeah.
Absolutely the hardest one. But I'm sure we all saw that coming. I mean, there was no one else really that would lay down their life like that for her.
Yeah.
Can you imagine anyone less cut out to be a spy? Which is what he was in the first season. And this is him being his potential. Awesome.
Yeah, he has had a few close calls with death, you know. I mean, he survived
Grayscale,
and it, I think, Jeremy, you said it when we were back in the trailer watching the episode, or maybe it was Steven. It was, I mean, hey, he died doing what he loved.
Mm-hmm. Hanging out with Dany?
Yeah, right.
Well, protecting her.
Died in her arms.
Wanted a makeout scene.
If there was any way for him to die before his time, it was going to be protecting the woman he loved. So at least we can find some solace in the fact that without his sacrifice, Daenerys probably wouldn't have made it
a long time. Same thing with mm-hmm. when we were talking about Grey Worm. I mean, really, like, through the majority of the episode, he was in the initial front, you know, the frontier of the forward attack against the White Walkers, retreated back, retreated inside of the Winterfell gates. So he really was able to go out, do his thing, come back, and then go back out again when it was time to protect Dany.
Yeah.
So it's just an amazing military strategy and arc for him as an individual character.
Yeah, he's our hearts really, my heart broke for it. I mean, he was like a father figure, but he loved her so much, and for him to die like that really got me. I mean, there was no one else I don't think Dany loved more, right?
How about is it her dragon showing some love for Jorah?
Well, her heart was breaking so much that I think
that Drogon decided to surround them sort of with his love. It seemed like he was almost hugging them in a way.
Well, he's been the only other person there I don't know if he's like a stepfather figure or an uncle figure, because he was manning, walking right next to the cages when they were 8 inches tall.
Yeah. And he, right. So what
That's
happens?
That's a good point.
And he was there for their birth, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, now what happens to Heartsbane, Jorah Mormont's sword? Does that go to someone else? And also another question I have for you guys is, what will happen to House Mormont? I figured if Lady Mormont went down, maybe Jorah Mormont can come back and be redeemed and have his own house again, but now he's gone. So what happens to House Mormont, and what happens to Heartsbane, the sword that he was just battling with?
Maybe Heartsbane goes to Sam, and maybe that whole thing comes full circle. You know,
with the grayscale, him curing Jorah. That'd be nice. I mean, and I saw Danny taking down a bunch of people, which was not expected by any means, because we haven't really seen her.
Girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, so it was nice to see her pick up the sword and not, you know, just stand behind Jorah being a scared girl. I mean, she fought as well. So, I mean, maybe she'll take the swords.
Maybe.
Does she still have the letter from Jorah? Where do those letters end up?
Where are all their belongings?
They're in a satchel.
These guys travel light.
In Dragon's
Den. Yeah. I was going to say, at least she has the love letters from Jorah.
Is Danny not a...
remember him by those.
Is she not a scrapbooker? Does she not keep her...
Yes. I still have letters from, my first boyfriend in, 7th grade.
Do you really?
Yes. I have every letter anyone's ever written me, I have
kept. Like, I feel like kids don't have notes anymore.
They don't write letters.
They're like, oh, I saved your iMessage.
I screenshot it.
Until my phone was stolen and I didn't have an
She iPod. Would be a good maester. You could be holding on
to that. Oh, yes. Oh, you have Citadel keeper. Written all over you.
Actually, I don't know. I feel like Kristen would make a good red woman.
Ooh, a little sorceress.
And that brings us into our last, I think, significant death of the episode, Lady Melisandre. Mm-hmm. We've seen her be a bad guy. We've seen her, I feel like, kind of be a good guy, but ultimately she's been kind of a mystery for us. And she was one of those characters who I think had the insight that Bran had and wouldn't really give it all to us. And she met her end at the very end of the episode. Tell me what you guys think about this.
I mean, she kind of walked into it, right? She took off her necklace, which we know what was keeping her young was the necklace. And she became the age that, you know, she probably is... 800 years old, 1,000 years old. Yeah. Maybe you guys know. Let us know in the comments how old she is supposed to be. But why did she feel like she needed to die at this point? Did she feel like she did serve her purpose? Did she feel like this was the end for her? I know a lot of times she said there are sacrifices that are needed, and a lot of times we've seen her do that with children, like Shireen. So maybe this was her sacrifice to the Lord of Light, is sacrificing herself. I mean, that's what I took it as.
Perhaps, yeah.
I wondered if she had used up her magic in some way. She had, after the amazing trick, the amazing feat of lighting all the Dothraki swords, then it was really tough to light up a saturated with probably oil pit and trench. And I wonder if her time was done. She walked off in peace, her magic exhausted.
She definitely knew she was going to die.
She said she wouldn't make it past dawn.
Right. And she told Varys last season, I must die in this strange land. Same with you. So that's, that was definitely a willing move that she pulled. She took her necklace off, walked off, and then met her end. Was it a promise to the Lord of Light? Was it a making sure that this, whatever vision she had, was fulfilled? You know, maybe she thought she might die in another way, but since she didn't, maybe it's like, well, in order for this to really...
She probably saw it in the fire, really, like with everything
Arya
else.
Killing the Night King?
Well, I think she saw probably her own death in the fire, because she knew it so long ago.
I know, but she's been wrong a few times, too, especially when dealing with Stannis and, you know, resurrecting Jon. Obviously, she knew that was going to serve a purpose, but not in the way that we would have predicted at that time. And then her reuniting with Arya, we see her say, you know, the blue eyes, like, there's going to be other deaths. And so I feel like... it'd be unfair to Melisandre's character to wrap it all in she knew the whole time, you know, what she was doing. She served her purpose and that was it. Because I think, like, all of the characters in the show, they're flawed. And I think that her going through all those trials and tribulations to find the rightful person she's supposed to help, probably Arya at this point, we can assume, you know, she's learned a lot in that way. And I think that when she goes out, I kind of agree with you, Jeremy. I think she's done. I think she's like, I've lived on this earth a long time, yeah. hundreds and hundreds of years. The Great War has come. I've fulfilled my purpose. I've seen it through. And now it's time, like all things, to lay it to rest.
Maybe she was just tired.
Girl's been working. She traveled by horse a long way.
The only other time we saw her do this was after she resurrected John. She pulled her necklace off, and we saw her. We're like, oh wow, she's old. You know, that's part of her character now. We know that she's been around for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's just all right. Now that my destiny is complete, now it's time to rest.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she wanted to die for so long. Because she was so terrified that it wouldn't light the pyres.
Right.
Yeah, at the end there.
She knew that she couldn't die until her purpose was fulfilled. So if this wasn't the time for it, maybe she'd have to wait another 1,000 to 10,000 years.
Yeah. And that's a scary thought. So yeah.
One final question on Melisandre. We did not get an interaction with her and Gendry tonight, did we? Which would have been cool. We got the interaction and an understanding with her and Davos, but Gendry was not in that.
That's a very good point. I'm sure she avoided it.
I think the her and Davos moment was a bigger, you know, obviously a little bit bigger to the storyline, but I like that they did that. But you're right about Gendry. We didn't see much of him either. We saw him fighting, but he wasn't a big, big plot point at all in this episode.
No. He was tired from last week.
Making all those weapons.
Weapons.
Hanging out with Arya.
Yeah, making the romance.
No, excellent. Yeah, I think that's a funny point. I would love to see maybe a reaction to, you know, her funeral. Are we going to have a funeral next episode for all of these people? I'm sure we will.
It's a pyre.
There might be a eulogy. I didn't know her for that long, but it seemed like...
I don't think they're going to waste time burying no. these people. I think Sansa will...
We got to move on. No. We have another war to fight.
No, yes. And that's why we're here, so to give our eulogy for these characters and to pay the respects. And that we did. And to them we say, Vala Morghulis.
Vala Daenerys.
There you go. All right, guys. Let's jump into a little bit more of a little bit more of an exciting topic. Battle tactics. And then right after Battle Tactics, we're going to be playing a little game called Imp Cup. Well, it's called Told You So, but
or maybe
it's in
not.
Our Imp Cup with a silent P. And our watch along, when we before we saw the episode, each of us wrote a prediction. We put it in this goblet, and it's the prediction for the episode. And I guess we'll find out after this next segment. Who was right, who was wrong, and what you win if you win, all right? So battle tactics. Let's talk battle tactics. This episode was unique in the fact that it was kind of all just one battle, one location, so we have a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. Professor Jeremy Dan, you read parts of Sun Tzu,
Clausewitz,
Art of War.
Read them all.
Okay,
not today.
Yeah, so break down for me. Let's just, you know, from the very beginning, what did you notice as to how they were set up, you know, their defense, and what strategy they were going for? Like, how did it all start? Let's talk pre-battle.
Yeah. Well, I think an interesting thing about this is some fans of the show going back to the Battle of the Blackwater, definitely the Battle of the Bastards. There was strategy playing out in really cool ways in that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people were really looking forward to the way strategy would play out in this. And we saw the battle map, we saw the formations, the preamble to the show, the opening credits showed the tents and the spike work and the trenches mm-hmm. being created. So... I think it's something the writers wanted to emphasize as well. Mm-hmm. I actually had a hypothesis that the battle was almost a way, it was going to be to avoid the battle, and that it was going to be a long battle, but the Night King was going to try to get some armies and go elsewhere. And that was in part based on, as I mentioned, Sun Tzu, attack them where they're weakest, which would be in the crypts and through the crypts, have it be a kind of a rear guard action.
And you're saying to try and kind of go around Winterfell and keep moving south.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I would expect too, considering we have three more episodes.
Yeah.
I figured they would the battle would get all the way to King's Landing or something.
I got worked. I was very wrong on this. This was very un-Sun Tzu. This was attack right at the people that have all of the dragonglass weapons, have all the dragons, have all the fire ready, and the Night King knows he has tens of thousands of people to throw at the problem and just try at a different viewpoint. Maybe when your armies are living, you attack the weak side. These guys went right to the strength. True. I think we, as we start with the battle, we're all getting excited about that Dothraki charge. I think most of the mm-hmm. other soldiers would have been put to better use in and closer to Winterfell. But the Dothraki, I was worried about them. Then I thought they might actually make a difference when we saw the lighting of their swords.
Yeah.
We were going, cool.
And we're like, they're going to do some work with those flaming swords. But they didn't do any work at all, did they? They all died.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it looked like they might have a new kind of secret weapon. They got, you know, +3 on every roll if you're using D&D terms or whatever. But that surprise weapon, nothing worked there. They were eaten up just like Stannis' formation in the battle with Ramsay. Mm-hmm. It was a very similar shot to me, although it was at night. You just saw Stannis' formation getting dissolved by the riders of the House of Bolton. And in this case, that formation just started to get dissolved and then literally extinguished. Not even 10%. Maybe 10% came back, it appeared. We saw dribs and drabs. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I was looking forward to, and I almost thought we saw the foreshadowing. I noticed a lot of work on arrows and a lot of boxes of arrows being carted around Winterfell.
But not being used.
Well, you guys should have seen
Jeremy's very sensitive about
arrows. During the watch-along?
He was trying to command the troops.
Knock! Draw! Loose! Where's the arrows? More arrows! Every like 10 minutes, you'd be like, where's the archers?
That battle was made for dragonglass arrows. They had 25,000, 50,000 whites standing 50 yards away from the walls of Winterfell behind a pit that was flaming. They let them stand there for multiple minutes until the Night King got within range, got a little plan, and started the bridge across. Those things should have been raining down
from,
I mean, just, it would have been like shooting fish in the proverbial barrel.
I
was just going to say, I mean, we saw John and Danny standing above to try to see how things were going. Obviously, it didn't go well, so they got on the dragons. So, I mean, maybe that's one reason we didn't see raining arrows, just because the dragons were going to be out there at some point. And it didn't seem that they had a planned attack of the dragons. It was sort of just, when times get tough, we're going to ride the dragons and rain fire.
We do know the dragons were supposed to light the fire pit, the moat, and because of this storm and this winter coming and winter being here, they weren't able to see Winterfell and weren't able to execute it, which is why Melisandre had to step in.
And when you talk strategy, there's a term in military parlance, the fog of war. Mm. And literally, we had the literal fog of war here. The Night King can bring that. He can bring the storm. And he brought the storm, brought the fog. It made it so Jon and Dany couldn't communicate. They didn't know where they were within that cloud
and where the
Night King was. And they did not know to light that pit and light that trench, which was a huge part of their strategy.
And of course, people think, oh, they're dragons. They're these massive creatures that you can control. And when times come, Dany and Jon will be able to control the dragons. But what a short-sighted thing to have that be your only plan of lighting the pit.
They really had... Their backup plan was pretty weak. They were shooting some like flaming arrows, and they wasn't working.
But I love this.
And it was like three.
Yeah. And we saw guys with the torches.
All right, we'll send some guys with torches, and they were getting cut down. And it was Grey Worm, right? Who saw
Melisandre?
Was it Grey Worm who saw Melisandre? And it was like
they formed a battle formation.
He was the one who commanded that. But
George R.R. Martin constantly talks about, and I mentioned it in the watch along, how his characters are flawed and how he feels as a, even as a writer, he's talking about his own characters coming back to him. And he's like, I just feel like they always make mistakes and they're so flawed and they're always making the wrong choices. And so we see this play out time and time again, and especially in this episode when dealing with these war and these strategies, thinking they have the best plan and it's so short-sighted at times.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I go ahead?
I was just going to say it was interesting how, Tyrion was saying, maybe if I was up there, I would see something like I did in Blackwater. And so it was like, I really do feel like they were sort of lacking someone at that point to oversee everything. Thankfully, it turned out the way it did, but they were losing most of this episode.
You know who saw something was Grey Worm.
Yes.
Grey Worm I think, knew the plan was going awry. He made the call for
protect the retreat.
Mm-hmm. That's the big audible. He mm-hmm. called it. He really bought into the fact we're fighting for the living. And these people are his friends, but he knew strategically that sacrifice had to be made for probably more that had already made that retreat, but he needed to finish who was inside that circle. And that was a huge part. Him and the remaining unsullied covering mm-hmm. that treat and mm-hmm. Grey Worm making that positive, active decision yes. to cut off that final remnant of the bridge.
Speaking of oversight, yes. I want to ask what you guys think of this in terms of there's going to be the battle for the throne and Jon mm-hmm. Snow and Daenerys all about their bloodlines. They were standing over and Daenerys made the choice to go in early to help people. Do you think Jon would have been better suited to not follow her, or do you think she made the right call?
Well, you know, it's interesting about when we're talking about, you know, should someone have done something, we come to find out that everyone, it was necessary for them to do what they did in order for
Bran.
It to, I know, and that's, and that's the thing is, you know, whatever anyone does seems to be what they needed to do, because mm-hmm. it's hard for us to say, like, oh, that was the wrong thing, because look what happened, you know, the Night King was destroyed and everything worked out. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, Stephen, I feel like John could have waited a little bit to see how things were playing out. I feel like he could, because to be honest, we had two dragons flying around kind of not really
and
doing
running
their job.
Into each other.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, they weren't really being utilized the way that they had planned to utilize them. Light the trench. Light up that line of whites that were standing there waiting.
And Jeremy mentioned they should have been on cleanup duty so that when the Night King lifted his arms to rise the dead, you know, that shouldn't have happened. One of the dragons should have been on cleanup duty.
Again, a phrase in military strategy. No strategy survives first contact with the enemy.
Right.
Or as Mike Tyson says, everyone has a strategy until they get punched in the face.
Exactly.
And literally the strategy with the dragons lasted 2 minutes into that battle. They were not flexible enough. They didn't have options. They didn't have contingency plans with what was going to happen. Yeah. They had to audible it. And it's not like they had radios like in the Avengers to contact with each other with the new plan. They were lucky. I actually thought that they might, it would have been, I mean, a dragon's got to fly, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I actually thought they would have been scared by the Night King's accuracy with his spears that they might actually hold the dragons behind the wall for part of it and blast out, which would have been interesting. But they were, in the end, they were more effective, even though they had to audible. They were just lucky that number one, the spears missed, and number two, man, that biting battle. How about that?
It was hard
to tell what was going on, but
the dragons biting each other.
Yeah, I thought two of them might crash down together and mm-hmm. there'd be one dragon left. But
it was a little confusing at one point. I was like, wait, are they fighting? Are those this Viserion? And that, you know, but I didn't get to mention it at the very beginning. That was my favorite moment, was the dragon fight.
Whoa.
That was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on, these dragons like fighting each other. I mean, I can't think of one example from another, you know, another show or film where two dragons went at it like that mm-hmm. before. It was really well done.
Yep.
And then afterwards, Viserion has this hole in his neck, shooting flames out of his neck. It's like
an extra weapon.
How interesting, too, to see Jon versus Viserion in the end, even though Arya's the one that saves the day, but you have Jon sort of like, okay, now's my time, like fighting against his own bloodline dragon lineage. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Also, Jon ending up, like the Battle of the Bastards, him running after Rickon and being alone in the middle of the battlefield, him getting, you know, when he gets thrown under the ground, alone in the middle of all these whites,
and
going after
beyond
the
wall.
Mm-hmm,
same thing. He's always just ready to take on the world.
I said it. Fans are going to kill me. I think Jon has a habit of failing up.
Like,
he has the right intention. He does really good work leading up to the big moments. And then in the big moments, he kind of gets saved by someone else, typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this case, it was Arya.
We heard Sansa's line to Littlefinger about
when she brought in the veil.
No, when she said, "I do learn. You know, I make mistakes, but I'm not getting that quote exactly right." But said, "I learn." Jon is not learning the same lessons that he did not. He had a lot to learn from Ramsay and could have used, like we talked about, the archers in a different way.
Yes.
But in a second battle in a row, Jon's plan lost the battle, and one of his sisters made it happen. Sansa essentially used Jon to get Ramsay to commit to the field in the Battle of Bastards so she could wipe out that army. And in this case, Arya, a great individual effort saved the day for the losing side.
Right. I feel like Drake should come out with a new single called John's Plan.
Oh,
John's plan.
There it is.
Okay, can we talk about the battle tactic that did work, though?
What was that, Kristen?
Drawing the Night King to Bran because everyone knew where he was going, and that's why they killed him. Well, that's now why Arya knew where to go.
We've confirmed the Night King's target, so that was a huge topic up for debate leading up to this episode. We talked about it last episode for episode 2 about the actor saying the Night King has a plan and he is going after a specific person, and people were wondering, is it Jon, is it Danny, is it Bran, is it Sansa and Arya? Like, they were a little bit lesser down the totem, but it's confirmed. That was his plan all along, was to find Bran. And I love what you were talking about in the watch along, and I want you to talk more about it. The Night King and his motivations and what he was doing, you know, and why Bran, and did he want to wipe out the memories? Did he want to free himself? Because he was just a normal guy. We don't know what he was before, but he was just a guy who never asked to be the Night King.
Yeah, I
never
mean,
wanted
I
it.
Was really hoping that this episode, I know it was all a battle, but I was really hoping for a moment we could go back and see Bran's vision to see if this was originally a Targaryen. I mean, we saw him get, you know, roasted by Drogon in this episode, and he was A-okay.
Yeah, he was fine.
And maybe that's, you can say it's because he was dead and he's not a Targaryen. People beat me up about that sign. They said he just adopted it from Children of the Forest and it was not a Targaryen symbol. But I don't know. I wanted to hear more about who this man was. Like you said, Anna Kay, that, you know, he never wanted to do this. You know, he was one of the original men. And talking about my time traveling Bran theory, which obviously, guys, it didn't come true.
But we all
thought that he was the one, like, who convinced the Children of the Forest to change the original man, because he was like, I'm from the future, don't turn me, whenever Bran would go back to the original man. And a lot of people were saying Bran needed to fall. Going back to season 1, whenever he goes out of the tower, people were saying Bran needed to go back to that moment in time and die when he fell out of the tower, when Jaime pushed him out of the tower.
Kind of like a butterfly effect thing. Solution.
Exactly, in order for the Night King not to happen. But none of that had to happen. But I really wanted to get some of his backstory, who this original man was, so that we could really care more about the Night King. I mean, it just seemed like such a side plot. We never really got to know this man. And I really wanted there to be more meaning behind his symbol. Behind his symbols, behind his motivations, behind, you know, his target being Bran.
Do you think that's George R. R. Martin saying, hey, this is just something that I want to say for the books?
Maybe, because up until this point, the Night King has not been in the books. So maybe that's like, hey, read the next book if you want to know the story of the Night King, because I think that's something he will absolutely include in the books.
I love that you mentioned Dany hitting him with the fire, because it contradicts what we've believed to be true this entire time, that he would be susceptible to that. So we're like, okay, Valyrian steel, okay, dragon glass and obsidian, okay.
Dragon fire.
And fire. And it's just, it's interesting that got proven wrong, but we didn't really get a deep understanding of why that was.
Right. They asked the question and Bran didn't know. He said, no one's ever tried that before. Remember when they're like, can you hit him with dragon fire? And they're like, he's like, I don't know.
He's been able to resist fire, but everyone thought dragon fire, so much more powerful, so much hotter, and that will make a difference. It didn't. Maybe it's just an ability that ice beats fire in this instance. Let me pose one final question to you guys in terms of the strategy. Obviously, you just mentioned a key part of the strategy was Bran by the Weirwood tree in the Godswood, drawing him out. But he got there, and he immediately, eyes go back in the head, and he's obviously somewhere else.
Oh,
we saw him for about 30 seconds use his power to warg into ravens and try to get some intel about where the Night King was. But he was in that mode the entire battle. Yeah. I don't know, what was he doing? Where was he? Where was he in time? Where was he on the battlefield, so to speak, looking at other things? Do you guys have any thoughts?
You know, we posed this question in the trailer. Where was Bran this time? What was he doing? He warged
into
some ravens.
Jeremy was very concerned about arrows and where did Bran go?
Where's Bran? Where's the arrows? Shoot some arrows. Bran, get a bow.
Warg into somebody, Bran.
Warg into somebody and shoot an arrow. Come on.
Warg into an arrow, Bran.
That's great.
But I don't know. I think it's just, maybe it's as simple as Bran was just watching to make sure everything was playing out the way that he envisioned it, because he was sitting there in that seat waiting for the Night King to come. There really wasn't much else he could do.
And he knew when he got there.
He had already played the role he was supposed to play. He gave Arya his dagger. Mm-hmm. You know, he did the right things, and I think he was just kind of like, I'm going to go check it out. I'm going to go watch and
well,
see if it's all
good.
Who
wants to watch that? Oh, my God.
When he first
show.
Wargs and you see his eyes go white, mm-hmm. we then see all these crows.
Well,
and
we see the three-eyed raven first. Right. So we see the raven
so
and then the crows.
Probably the three-eyed raven in the middle of the crows. Mm-hmm. And then that's when we get to see where the Night King is and that he's riding Viserion. So I do think he was, you know, the three-eyed raven kind of watching everything and mm-hmm. kind of tracking him. Because when the Night King does arrive at Bran, Bran immediately comes back. So he knew he was there. It's not like someone had to wake him up like we saw earlier in the seasons with Orel. And people had to, like, yell Orel for him to come out of the warging. So right. Bran knew what
was that. Was Bran releasing the ravens and calling the Night King to him?
You know, I feel like, and I feel like Steven's jumping on board. Yeah. So you want to say something before I...
Yeah, I think it's the mark that he left on Bran is active when he's using his power. I think he had to be in that mode
Got
so the Night
it.
King
I
could
love
track
that.
Him.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I feel
agree.
Like he was drawing him closer to him so that this plan could be executed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. I feel like most of Bran's involvement, like I said, happened over the past... Ever since he became the Three-Eyed Raven and started doing things he was stacking dominoes, right? Stacking dominoes this whole time just so they could fall right where they lay. I feel like the only problem, maybe it wasn't a problem, but, you know, obviously Jon Snow didn't know that Bran was going to be fine. I mean, we were all kind of thinking the most crucial thing is to kill the Night King, but then we saw Jon like, no, we gotta protect Bran because Bran is the ultimate weapon, right? He's the ultimate power. He's maybe the one we're all thinking there's some kind of like thing about Bran that he can warg into the Night King, or he can go back in time and kill the Night King, or all this stuff. We're thinking it's some kind of crazy power that the Three-Eyed Raven has, but in reality he's just sitting there waiting for all the pieces to fall into place the way he set them up. I mean, we got to see a great moment for Jon. He was seeing Sam was in trouble, but he kept going. Mm-hmm. We saw Jaime was in trouble and Brienne was in trouble. There was a lot of these people who normally he would forego whatever he was doing and help them. He didn't. Bran was the most important thing. He couldn't get past Viserion. Yes. But it just,
Viserion.
Just goes to show that people were aware of how important Bran was. And we're aware that the Night King targeted him, but do we know exactly why? Why is he trying to kill the Three-Eyed Raven? You know, why was that so important? Why was he the target? And, yes.
Yeah, no, I want to say, too, with Chris, I love what you were talking about with the Night King and going deeper. For me, I also want to know more about the relationship between Bran and everyone around him now. It's like, we never had conversations. We talked about this last week. We never had conversations about how Bran revealed himself to be the Three-Eyed Raven to everyone and why they believe him and trust him. It's like, they have this visceral, guttural trust in Bran, but we never got the experience as fans and as viewers to really understand that dynamic and how much they do believe. Because they don't, no one really truly understands it, I don't think, besides Sam. And so I don't even know how much our main characters truly understand about Bran's power.
Yeah, and I think that's why he's everyone's least favorite. Because we don't know. There hasn't been a lot of building and understanding and development of this,
I feel like
to other characters.
Right.
You walk up to
besides
Bran.
The Reed children, obviously, and everyone that was on that path with Bran, but, you know.
If you sit down next to Bran and be like, Bran, I gotta ask you a question. What's going on with you? I can just feel like he's the guy who would be like, I don't want to talk.
You know who
There's
did
no
that?
Time for this.
Tyrion.
Tyrion did it. So maybe Tyrion will have some reveal that is going to give him greater credibility for the... And I shouldn't use this term, but the end game in the final three episodes.
Yeah. Great movie, by the way.
I want to ask one question left, too, without spoiling everyone in this booth that I'm in. with Bran, now what? Because he was never fearful at all. So was this even the main significant role for him?
I hope not.
No. I argue that Bran's tie to Arya is going to be deeper than we even know. We talked earlier about how when Bran greeted his sisters for the first time after being away from them for so long, he didn't even hug Sansa. And Arya, he put his arm around her, and there's something, there's giving her the weapon. There's some bond between them. And I think it's going to, I don't know for me if Arya is going to be the one to get the throne in the end, but I think that Bran will be part of the play and what Arya is experiencing as she gets closer to the throne in whatever capacity that means.
It doesn't see
I was just going to say, I feel like a lot of people are so bored by the Bran story, and we made up all these Bran traveling theories because we were hoping there was more to his story. But guys, I don't think there is. I think there will be in the books, but I think the rest of the three episodes, we got to focus on Cersei and what's going to happen, what the end looks like. And we still got to lose a lot more characters because, I mean, if you think this ends well, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, right.
Ramsay well, says to Theon.
That's what Bran said to Jaime, is like, well, who says there is an afterwards? I mean, there is. Great War's over. Jaime's alive. Bran's alive. What did Bran mean? Was he just saying it to keep Jaime on his toes? To be like, hey man, don't get too comfortable. I'm not going to tell you the answers. Or is there really something even more epic? I mean, obviously there's a lot of show left, but is it the, as I guess it was in the post-credit teaser for next episode, Daenerys has dubbed it the last war. Mm-hmm. We won the Great War. Now it's time to win the last
war. There's no last war, Daenerys.
they were drinking and toasting that.
I know.
That's a total
other
thing.
Another one. She feels up too.
They were pretty damn happy.
Yeah.
A final thing on Bran. We saw it with the Three-Eyed Raven, Max von Sydow, in his portrayal. There was no dread when he saw his imminent demise. It's almost like the Three-Eyed Raven can't have fear. So the Three-Eyed Raven, he knew the Night King was about to swing away at him, but we didn't see him cower away in his astral plane projection, whatever you want to call it, and in the physical world, and Bran had no cowering either.
I would lend to say that he probably knew Arya was coming, but...
Yeah, at least he was just sitting there like, man, I hope she gets here on time.
People have asked in the comments, like, can Bran see the future? But we've seen him have dreams. He had the dream of his father dying, and we've seen him have other dreams, like meeting Jojen Reed that eventually came true. So I think he does have dreams that of future predictions and things that would happen.
Speaking of predictions...
Yes!
Let's play a game! And
is there a musical theme as we do this?
Yes.
There it is. Okay, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the game is Told You So. We are pulling predictions that we wrote at the beginning of the episode, before we watch the episode, what we predict would happen for that episode. So, Jeremy, without further ado, what's our first prediction?
Ooh.
Who said Theon dies protecting Bran?
Oh!
That feels like a Kristen prediction to me.
Theon dies protecting Bran. I mean, wasn't a very strong prediction. I don't know.
Judging.
It's like saying it's going to snow in Winterfell.
We had no arrows in the episode, but we got an arrow right now.
Excellent prediction. You win a chocolate Bravosi coin.
Oh, you're rich.
I will be using this.
Vala Magules, Kristen.
Valadares.
Excellent job. Great prediction.
I'll see you at the House of
Do we have
any
more in there? Yeah, we got three more in there.
We got more.
Jaqen H'ghar.
Who said Brienne will die protecting Jaime?
It was me. Not quite right, but they
back
both fought
to back.
They fought back to back, and I thought if Jaime was going to die, I didn't think he was going to die necessarily, but if he were, Brienne would be the one. Or I'm sorry, if Jaime lived, Brienne would be the one to help him out.
Yeah. Does this mean I get her chocolate?
Yes,
I get her Bravosi coin.
Yes. We got to save
I'm
that
a poor
for next
woman.
Week. We only have so many coins.
I feel like a raven has come in.
Ooh, yeah, right.
I'm doing the
we
sound.
We should roll them up next
did
time.
Bring
the
us
sound
all
effects.
These yeah. Papers to write on.
Who
scrolls.
Said Bran will warg into a dragon?
Jeremy Dan said it.
That was me.
Oh,
I wanted so bad for Bran to, you know, when he like warged, I was like, oh my god, is he gonna get into a dragon right now and fly around? No, more ravens. But I thought it might have been a cool idea to, I mean, the kid in the wheelchair to be like be flying around. Didn't happen, but...
They did say, you will fly again. You will not walk, but you will fly.
Yeah.
Oh,
as
that still
raven.
Has to pay off.
Ravens.
As the ravens.
Oh.
There was
yeah.
a point,
ravens,
though, where yeah. Viserion, I felt like, could have killed Jon right at the end, and he was sort of just, like, growling at him. So maybe
he was about to
warg into him. You never know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Anyways,
he had a
so
hole in the side of his neck.
We got one more.
You win chocolate, but if you lose,
this paper.
Look how big, God, you guys, if you're watching this. I mean, we all wrote on tiny pieces of paper if you're listening. Jeremy, Professor Jeremy Dan wrote on an entire full-size legal sheet.
Because I was thinking about the production value of holding it to the camera. But my prediction was, there will be wolves, dead and alive. So what I thought, we'd been in the crypts for several times in the previous episodes, and we saw a lot of statues next to the Starks of wolves. And I thought that the wolves that had died in the previous seasons might be there and be risen, and that maybe way, way, way earlier Starks, because it was a symbol of their house, had them. And the other thing, we had Nymeria in a recent scene with Arya.
Right.
And she made her return as Arya was journeying back and had a super pack that she was leading. We had Ghost return last episode.
Ghost leading this
Dothraki, yeah.
And so I thought somehow there would be a pack of wolves that would jump into this battle, and it'd be really cool, like the eagles flying in, not, you know, Don Henley and all that, but the eagles flying in the Tolkien stories, yeah.
That
would have been cool, and you would have some chocolate, but it wasn't, and you don't.
And I'm going to go find Jock and Hagar and give him three names.
Yay for Kristen for winning. Told you so.
Told you so, guys. I told you so.
Not these three names.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say that.
So, I have other ones on my list.
So next week we'll be doing the same thing. We'll be making predictions before the episode on our watch-along. Yes. If you guys want to watch along. It's called the Watch Along.
Yes, and you can watch along and leave comments and leave your predictions, because I will be manning it, and I love reading those. We mentioned we give shout-outs during the show, and we take a lot of those feedback and those thoughts into our after show, so make sure that you guys are commenting if and when you watch our Watch Along.
I'm predicting people toast the last war.
You know what? And let's give a toast to our close to 1,000 people watching us live right now in YouTube. This is a cheers to you.
We love you guys. Oh, gosh. There's my notes.
Such a wonderful fandom.
Never again.
Thank you, guys. And to everyone who's watching right now, if you just, you know, scroll over and just give us a quick thumbs up, we'd really appreciate that. Thank you guys for watching. You are our family, and we wouldn't have a show without you. So thank you so much. Let us move into our final topic of discussion.
Yeah, I love this.
Which is so suiting and fitting to an episode like this, where a lot of people's journeys are ending, and we only have a few more episodes. Let's talk about finding purpose. Let's talk about the characters that, I mean, we've already kind of touched on Theon and Melisandre and their, what we would call, destiny, I guess, and lack thereof, perhaps, in feeling like Sansa and Tyrion maybe didn't feel like they had a purpose in this show. Let's talk about the different characters. Well, we'll start off with, I think, the strongest one and the most, you know, powerful of the episode, the MVP, so to speak, Miss Arya Stark.
Yes.
I want to ask you guys, was that her purpose? We saw Melisandre said, in your eyes, I see brown eyes, green eyes, and blue eyes. Mm. And she fulfilled that. She's got most of her names off the list, except for Cersei, I believe, is in the mountain. Cersei in the mountain. Is there anyone left on her list? And is her purpose been fulfilled other than that? And what's left for Arya and her destiny?
Yeah, I'm still hoping that Jaime accidentally dies somehow, saving someone in this next war, and then Arya can wear his face Arya can wear Jaime's face to kill Cersei. I'm still hoping that's part of the plan and going to happen. That's going to be my M cup.
You mean prediction. That would just be a lovely scene? It would be very sentimental for you, or it'd be cool.
Both. I mean, like,
full circle.
I mean, there was the prediction that Cersei will die by her brother's hands, and so I'm just hoping that Arya. It's like a double whammy, you know. Arya gets to make the kill, and it's by Jaime, someone who Cersei would not suspect.
And it was prophesized, right?
That's what exactly.
That's what you're saying. That would be cool, but we would have to lose Jaime.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
He's on my death pool, which we're gonna talk about next.
So after this, we're talking death pool, so get ready.
Jumping back to Arya, I just think what an amazing full circle, her training at the House of Black and White, everything she suffered through getting from King's Landing and finding her way home, dealing with her sister and the politics there at Winterfell, dealing with her relationship with the Hound and their journey and her being able to survive that. Arya coming through and realizing what I think, again, I love extrapolating to the bigger purpose and meaning in life and how the show represents life. But when Melisandre says the thing about the blue eyes, Arya realizing what she has to do, but I think it was always inside of her. And like a lot of us, we probably get scared at times for really, it's scary to realize your true potential and to really step up for what you believe in and what you want. So to see her have that moment of, I know what I have to do. This is why I'm here. I'm not fighting the small fight. I'm fighting the big fight. And I'm worthy of fighting the big fight. I'm worthy of being someone who's going to make a major impact in this war. Mm-hmm.
The full circle goes back even further than that because Melisandre parroted the same line as Cyrio Farrell of looking
death
in the face.
Today?
What do we say to death?
Not today. Exactly. And that was she.
That's all she needed. That was like day one of her training. And yeah, it completely came full circle there.
Yeah, yeah. She always wanted to be a fighter. It was just in her nature, right?
And all the time she's been doubted and put down and disregarded, and that girls don't fight, and that people thought she was dead, and for losing, getting to the Red Wedding late, and not being able to help Catelyn and Rob and her, the rest of her family, and the Knights of the Vale. And I just what a moment for her to realize that this is who I am, and I'm bigger than even I thought.
It was almost lost on her. I mean, being chased around by zombies for like half the episode, it seemed like she had kind of had her spirit broken. I mean, she's such a warrior, and this is the first time we've really seen her
crack
since maybe the Wraith, and that, you know, battle
Waif.
Between, what did I say?
The Waif.
The Waif.
A Wraith is like a demon specter.
Wraith
is in Halo.
Wraith
is in Halo.
I want to talk about whenever Arya was talking to her father, Ned Stark, season one, and he was like, you know, you're going to grow up and you're going to marry a lord and you're going to wear, you know, beautiful gowns and you're going to have children. And she said, that's not me.
Yep.
And, you know, so she really, you know, was her own trailblazer, and she had a different path, and she knew that from the beginning. And I think we finally got to see what that was. And she's always been my favorite character.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
No, absolutely. She has.
A beautiful moment, too, is when Arya and Sansa are about to part. And I love that even Sansa doesn't doubt Arya. Sansa doesn't say, come down to the crypts, you're only safe there. You know, they have a quick conversation. Arya gives Sansa the piece of dragonglass. And I really love that even Sansa has come into believing in her sister in a real way. In a real way, saying, okay, I have my limitations. I can't go fight the way that these people are fighting, and my strategy has limitations. I'm going to go down to the crypts, but here's my sister, a true fighter, a true warrior, and I'm going to celebrate that. It's the first time, really, we've seen Sansa really have Arya's back in terms of battle.
Speaking of Sansa, let's move to her and Tyrion down in those crypts, and let's talk about their purpose. I mean, we have two really powerful characters, and Varys, sitting in some crypts, seemingly helpless, can't do anything to help. They're so capable, and they're such powerful players in this game, and yet they're down there, unable to do anything, feeling like they have no purpose. What is their purpose at this point in the game?
I mean, they kind of were down there, and they were like, "We're down here with all these other people because we actually can't do anything up there, but what we can do is look truth in the eye." And face the truth that is, you know, our job to be down here. I mean, for Tyrion, I thought, you know, Dany, he was always questioning Dany, what's going to happen if you die? So I feel like she put him down there because she had trust that he would know what to do should she fall. And that he could be, you know, stand in her place to rule if needed.
Sure.
And Sansa, I mean, she's kind of the new Peter Baelish. She has been trained by the best, by Cersei, by Peter. I mean, she is now, I mean, even though they're not together anymore, and they kind of talked about their marriage, which was cute, and that long stare and gaze at each other, and her talking about how they can't be together because of Dany, I don't think she's going to feel that way anymore.
Sure.
We talk about this a lot in some of our favorite characters, how sometimes their greatest strength is to know their greatest weakness. Mm-hmm. For me, this was a redeeming quality for Sansa. Like my issues with Theon, I have issues with Sansa and her lack of self-understanding to know that she has limitations. She thinks she knows everything. She thinks she knows more than Dany. She thinks she knows more than Jon. And yes, she has proven that she is a force to be reckoned with, and she has overcome being underestimated. But her retreating and seeing her weakness and having that moment with Theon of like, okay, I've done what I can to this point. I'm sure she's going to be a major player in our final three episodes. But to see her kind of retreat into herself and look inward for once. I really did appreciate that in her character arc.
Yeah, Sansa is going to be key to any conflict with Cersei because she's obviously the one that understands Cersei the best at this point.
And I hope people listen to her.
Yes, Jaime fooled.
Tyrion fooled.
Cersei, or excuse me, Dany fooled. And that's her purpose now. The one, as you were mentioning, has learned from a master and absorbed from more than one master. I was actually a little let down by their purpose in that crypt. I did find it was heartwarming, their moment behind the sarcophagus when they affirmed a respect and who knows, maybe even a love or a love of a different kind for each other, and each had a piece of dragon glass and were ready to at least do what they could do. I actually thought we might see a purpose play out of cleverness because they are both so clever, and that we have Tyrion essentially won the dumb battle of Casterly Rock with his knowledge of the sewers. I thought maybe he would start asking her, he would see things no one could see and get the idea of, do you know about areas that we can escape through? And she might lead an escape with her knowledge of Winterfell then. I was saying, oh, they're behind this crypt. Maybe there's some secret passages that no one knows about. In the end, it was all a matter of timing. They were seconds away from dying.
Right. It was an unconventional kind of battle. These aren't people you're fighting. These aren't people you can intimidate or fool or scare. This is just death coming for you. There's really nothing, you know, a witty man can do, you know, to get out of those situations. And I think that's what they were feeling. And in that moment, who knows if it was like a foxhole love, but I really liked how they teased the idea of, I mean, Sansa said herself, you were the best of them. So, and he's like, oh, that was a terrifying thought, but you know, maybe
I think it's deeper than that.
Well, they've been through a lot, and it's about mutual respect, and it's a pragmatic relationship. She's Lady of the North. He's still a Lannister, you know? I mean, it's... and he's Hand of the Queen. She's kind of Hand to Jon in a way. I mean, I know...
Yeah, I like what Kristen said about Littlefinger-esque. You know, she's kind of the new Baelish.
They can be the new power couple, and I kind of like it.
What's interesting is Cersei, because of the loss of her family, is a strategist and ruthless and doesn't have the grounding still in love. We've seen with Sansa, with Theon and then with Tyrion, and she
Jon
actually
too.
has gained this hard side and this strategist side, but is melding it with a side of love. And I wonder if it's going to give her an ultimate strength.
Yeah.
I see a lot of conflict coming from this small scene in the catacombs because Missandei doesn't know what Jon told Daenerys. And now Missandei has it in her head that, oh, look at Tyrion and Sansa getting a little bit close together. Oh, if only Daenerys wasn't here anymore.
Yeah.
Betrayal may be coming.
Yeah, I mean, she even Grey Worm said, hey, you know, after this, let's get out of here. Yeah.
Let's go
but
to the
Missandei
beach.
Was totally down. She was like, I'll leave Daenerys. That's cool. Let's go.
Missandei stand
together.
By her queen.
Not.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the Hound protecting Arya?
Yeah, let's talk about Clegane. I mean, you know, he is overcome a lot. We still gotta see him do Clegane Bowl, and that's, I think, his purpose. But ultimately, we saw that he found a purpose in Arya and defending her like he had before. And I think that's a purpose that he discovered. And he also discovered that he could try to build anew, you know, with that church and that group of people who got slaughtered almost immediately. What's Clegane's purpose besides Clegane Bowl and besides being Arya's ward?
Well, we saw him kind of retreat. And he does this
scared of fire.
He does this every single battle. We saw it at Blackwater where he's like, screw the king, screw the people, I'm out of here. And he's always left. And it was Beric Dondarrion that was like, you know, tell her it's not worth fighting for. And he saw Arya needing his help. And finally that pulled at his heartstrings. And he faced the fire, which he's been scared of his entire life. So it was nice to see him finally get out there and see his purpose and see that he was needed. Because I just feel like he hasn't ever felt that he's really been needed to have any sort of effect on an outcome. So it was nice to see that he really did. He protected Arya so she could get to the Night King. So he came in, he found his purpose right at the right time.
Yeah, it's never a good feeling to feel used. Like, you're just there because, I can swing a sword. That's really the only reason why I'm here, you know. Ultimately, we had the living army, and the army was basically life versus death, but that wasn't enough for him.
I know.
He gave up. Death is coming. That's it. It's over. But to have hope gives purpose, I think.
I think it was the closest our hound Clegane friend could get to expression of love. And I think for him, it was his way of saying, I choose life, I choose love, and I choose Arya.
Yeah. That's like going to be on a bumper sticker someday. Watch. Life, love, and Arya Stark.
Exactly. That's all you need in life.
Great. Is there any other, before we get to our death pool?
Well, that's what I'm so excited to talk about.
Was there any other characters you guys wanted to touch upon? You know, anyone else who you think deserves kind of a little bit of a, you know, moment in the spotlight?
Well, Melisandre is, and Theon. They have similar arcs. They were responsible for deaths and not just moral failings, but evil in that world in a certain way with Shireen Baratheon and a ton of stuff. Theon both had some evil betrayal, lack of studliness and lack of courage. He had it all, and they each had the redemption factor of being major factors in that battle.
Yeah, it was a culmination of a lot of different events coming into play. I mean, a lot of different destinies, so to speak, were all fulfilled right in this episode. We had, like you said, Beric Dondarrion. We had Melisandre and Theon Greyjoy.
Can't read it.
I want to say, I know we'll see more of them, but I'm glad that we got to see snippets of Jaime Lannister still being alive and in play, Brienne still being around. Tormund, I don't remember if we saw it.
Yeah,
I think he's still good. So I do like the idea of bringing these characters to King's Landing. The most, you know, for Tormund, he's never been south. This is the most south he's been is to Winterfell. So I can't wait to see what he's like in King's Landing.
He needs some new clothes.
Right? It should be interesting.
And we'll get more of those interesting tidbits and snippets in our last segment called Predictions that we do at the end of every episode. But for now, which is kind of like somewhat of a prediction type game, we're going to do Death Pool.
Death Pool.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people at home have been doing this, especially, I mean, throughout the series, but especially this last season because, hey, you're either going to live or you're going to die. There's only two options in this Game of Thrones series, right? So,
Kristen, tell
us about yours.
My friend Paul Kim, he has put together a mortality Game of Thrones, who you think is going to die. There may or may not have been money involved. But you had to pick, and we had a picture of all the characters of the show that you could pick from. And then we basically, out of those characters, we picked seven that we thought would die by the end of this season. So if we go to the next picture, you'll see all of our mortality pools, the seven everybody thinks is going to die. So my seven particularly
Tell us, who's going to die?
Well, Melisandre, so check. Got that one right.
Ding, ding, ding.
And then also...
Get some more candy.
I had... Yeah, I want more candy, guys. The Night King, check.
Oh!
That was on my list.
Yep.
Now, was that a bonus pick? Was that one of those?
Some of them had, like, plus twos and plus threes.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And then...
Well, you were just two for two?
And then also, I said Theon Greyjoy.
Oh!
Three for three. And then my other ones were sort of for, like, the rest of the season. So I say that the Mountain's gonna die at the Hand of the Hound.
Okay.
So that one is hopefully coming up, the Clegane Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say Jaime's gonna die, obviously, because I want Arya to use his face to kill Cersei, who is also on my list. I mean, she has to die. Is she like the biggest episode, like the biggest enemy overall? I feel she's the bigger enemy than the Night King, really. I mean, that's not what we wanted to
think. That's
what
today proved,
She is now.
Yeah, she is the last enemy standing. And so that's it. So, oh, and Euron. I also predict that Euron. I mean, he's kind of with Cersei now, so he's just got to go.
Yeah, he's got to go.
So hopefully I win this thing. I'll let you guys know.
You're on the list.
Oh, I see what he did there. I can't.
You like that?
Yeah.
Okay. There it is. And I also have one with my friends. My friend, Charlie put it together is basically listed all the characters, are they dead, are they alive by the end, and also he put in, will they turn into a white?
Oh,
that was really underplayed. So many people were conjecturing for a while, who will we see turn and like actually maybe take action and kill someone that we care about? Everyone was dreading Hodor. And we saw Lyanna Mormont, but just turned briefly, right? We didn't see her do anything. The most significant person we saw in battle was Dothraki Horseman number one, the guy that essentially the guy who has been at Daenerys's right hand, but has not spoken a line in English. That was the most prominent person we saw turned into a white. But
they just kind of stood around. So we saw that when Jon Snow was surrounded by these, they were just kind of standing there. And I think, I think that the reason that was is because the Night King is kind of like a, it's kind of a hive mind situation where he's actively kind of controlling what these whites do and don't do. And I think in that moment he was just really like, no, like, everyone just chill. I'm about to kill the three-eyed raven. No one mess this up. No one do anything weird. And so his focus was on that.
I'm definitely going to have to watch it again to see if, like, Ed is in the mix or one of those
Maester Luwin. The maester of the Winterfell, I feel like he was risen from the crypts because it was a maester. You could tell
the
robe that they were wearing. So that's the only maester that I know that was in the crypts of Winterfell. So pretty sure Maester Luwin was risen.
All right, guys.
Check that out.
For Jeremy and AK, I'm just going to give you a few names, okay? Because Kristen and I have already kind of done a death pool. But for this, I'm going to give you a few names and you're going to tell me dead or alive by the end of the series, okay? And we're going to keep them recorded, and if you guys win, I'll get you some chocolate.
Yeah.
All right? All right. Gilly.
Dead.
Alive.
Okay.
She's very resourceful. Okay. She's made it through a lot.
I don't think it'd be worth it to kill her, really.
I think she'll be... I think Sam has to lose everything.
She's the she's the mother of the new Night King.
Yes.
What?
I mean, technically, it was Craster's children who became White Walkers, and she has the mother of the last Craster's child. So, very good point. Actually, Kristen, what do you think? Gilly, dead or alive?
Yeah, she's alive. Okay. It's not worth killing her in the last... We've got three episodes left. We need to kill the most important characters and focus on their stories.
Excellent. Moving on. Bronn.
Bronn.
Oh, I think he lives.
Kristen, alive for you?
If Tyrion lives, Bronn lives. They go together. Alive.
Live for
AK? Okay, I'm going the other way. I am going to say dies because he's the ultimate survivor, and if he does like a Theon move in some way, that would be pretty awesome. So, and also I need to get some points against you.
He's not killing Tyrion, and I stand by that. I've been saying it since episode one of this season. I do not see Bronn killing Tyrion.
No
so.
Way.
All right, very good. And our last name, Gendry. Dead or alive?
Alive. I don't think these characters are important enough to
I'm gonna
die.
Say dead.
Kristen's... No one's dead.
Dead.
And you're like, dead, no. Dead for AK.
Dead because, dead. I don't know, the Baratheon... I don't know. There's something in there where we just got to clean up. We got to get rid of all ties to the throne. Mm-hmm. Poor Gendry's out.
I like that. I like that.
I'm saying alive as a kept man. I will call you my lady.
Oh.
So he's going to like that lifestyle.
Arya's going to protect him is what you're thinking.
I like that.
She's not letting... She's protected him this entire couple seasons. I mean, so many times, everyone wanted to hunt him down, and she was always like, you want Gendry, you got him. He loved that helmet. I mean, so many times, and she escorted him outside the castle using Jaqen to help her get out. So she's going to protect him till the end.
Do you think Arya... Just side note real quick. Do you think Arya's going to have herself a little Baratheon babe? Little baby? Little Baratheon baby? Is Arya pregnant?
Oh, she could be pregnant.
What do you think about that?
I, like, don't see that.
She's too young to me still. I still am not over the sex scene. I just... I
can't. Wait, I heard in junior high health class you can't get pregnant from the first time. Is that not true?
Oh, my God. Not true.
Okay, let's...
I don't know, but you know, I was curious about that.
Also, that's what guys will tell you at night
also,
in the bedroom.
I'm not entirely sure. I never really looked it up because whatever. But I think that might have been a body double. I don't know, but you know, right?
Oh, I'm
so
told
don't
it
even
was
worry.
Her body.
Really?
Yeah,
she did an interview.
What? She did an interview and it was her?
Yeah, it was her.
Oh, I read something else saying it was. That's false information.
Good on her then. Good on her.
Yeah, she just didn't want to show too much, which I'm happy she did.
I was talking to a buddy and the reason why he binged the whole thing, he's like, it's... It was too soon for me because I started the series like 2 weeks ago, and now all of a sudden she's like having sex, and I still see her as like a little 9-year-old girl.
He hasn't grown with her.
Yeah, exactly. Like we've been watching the show for years and years, so it's a little easier. But for him, he's like 2 weeks ago she was a little girl. I don't, you know. But all right, guys, thank you for playing this round of Deathpool.
Special segment.
We will revisit this particular Deathpool, and we will tally your points if you. By the end of the series, we will find out who wins the padded throne that we're sitting on. Guys, the three names were Gilly, Braun, and Gendry. If you'd like to play along in our death pool, please comment along, shoot us a tweet, whatever it is that you'd like to do to play along with us.
And we'll tally up you, too, and we'll read out, you know, who wins from the comments.
Yeah, it's awesome when you guys discuss, because most of the time you bring up stuff we never even thought of. It's really great to have you actively involved, so thank you. So that was our game, Death Pool. Let's go into a little bit of news and gossip.
My news is really quick. Dealing with the battle. It's the longest battle sequence in cinematic history. It was 750 people, 11 weeks to shoot, in grueling, freezing night shoots. So there were epic stares, epic songs that we all commented on, the heartbeats. I mean, it was just incredible, but they said it was awful shooting. 11 weeks.
11 weeks.
They said they'd have to be up all night long. They'd go to sleep at like 5 a.m. and have to wake up by noon and be ready. But they said it came across in their faces and in their performance how like tired and exhausted they
were. That's almost 3 months of just one battle sequence. Yeah. That's longer than what it takes to film most films.
Yeah.
Usually films, you can get them done in a month and a half.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Not fun to film, but very fun to watch.
Yes.
Thank you, Kristen. And we have more news and gossip. Anything? Jeremy?
Yes. So, the Game of Thrones prequel, we're all, you know, very checking out the news items, seeing what's coming up in that. We have news that Naomi Watts, of course, has been cast.
Cool.
I saw one of the first places they'll be filming, and I believe this is a new place, but the Canary Islands in the Atlantic off the coast of Africa. Also in Harper's Bazaar, they're talking about other possible prequels, and that Max Bornstein, the screenwriter for Kong Skull Island and Godzilla, is in talks or in the works of maybe doing something. So might that be something that pulls in some dragons or something like that?
Yeah.
And then Brian Helgeland, who won the Oscar for L.A. Confidential, but then won the Razzie for The Postman. He's also working on something. And Carly Rae is working with GRR, George R.R. Martin. She's a writer from The Leftovers and the show Mad Men.
Ooh,
so what directions might that take?
We'll see.
Very cool. Right, big eclectic mix of different cinematic backgrounds. A lot of drama, a lot of action, all the best stuff.
Maybe a romantic comedy in there somewhere.
I think there you go. Exactly. Why not? Thank you, Jeremy.
All right, for my music lovers out there, this is really exciting. So Columbia Records just released an album inspired by Game of Thrones. It came out on the 26th, and get this, it features all of the most major artists coming together. Mm-hmm. We've got Maren Morris, The Weeknd, Mumford & Sons, ASAP Rocky, The Lumineers, like all these different people.
Wow. Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran.
Is he in it?
I don't see him on my list, but one can hope.
He has been in the past.
He Travis wasn't getting Scott, the love.
Ty Dolla $ign.
He had a song. He had one.
And then Florence and the Machines, right? They did the ending credits for episode 2.
They covered the song Jenny of Old Stones, which we saw in the episode, and then it was sung by Florence and Machine during the end credits. So you guys can go on Apple, Spotify, iTunes. It's called For the Throne. Really amazing, cool mixture of all of these musical celebrities coming together for Game of Thrones.
There's like two or three good songs on it. I'd say download the songs you like. I listened to the whole thing.
Did you really?
It's more...
It's not the best.
Oh,
it's more about how epic the show is to bring in all these people, because you don't have this type of talent on one album typically.
Yeah. Preach.
And so it just goes to show in its final run, season 8, Game of Thrones, still having the power that it had season 1, and just being just this epic show that every single person wants to be part of in some way.
I love The Lumineers, so I'm definitely at least going to listen to that one.
Yeah.
I want to hear Podrick sing again. That's just me, though.
He's going on tour. Podrick is still alive. He's still alive. You might get it.
I want
before the end of the season.
I see it. I want it. I like it. I got it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for the news. That's all exciting stuff. Before we wrap up, let's talk AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Now,
AfterBuzz TV predictions. Guys, I think...
What do you got for us, Kristen? Tell us.
I think Danny might let Sansa stay in the north. I mean, I would like to see Sansa be tactical, like you said, and help with what Cersei's going to do. But I don't know. Someone does have to stay in the north. And she was constantly asking Danny, after this, what happens in the north? So, you know, Danny might just give her what she wants, even though I think it would be nice to see her help with dealing with Cersei, because she's the only one that really knows what's going on and can predict Cersei. Basically, don't believe Cersei, but I don't think there's going to be any more correspondence happening. I don't think there's going to be any more truce. I think they're just going to go down there and rip her out of her throne. Roots and stem, Danny says.
Roots and stem.
So, yeah, and Cersei's death is coming. I want to see Cleganebowl. I think Euron, he's going to hopefully die. Mm-hmm. And so is Jaime.
But you think Sansa will stay and rule in the north?
I think she's staying in the north. Somebody has to. We've got a lot of cleanup to do.
Wait, Kristen, you don't even think Sansa's going to go to King's Landing for this other war? You think she's going to stay, or she's going to go and then go back?
I don't know. Wow. It's just someone's got to stay. She was so focused about what's going to happen in the north. I'd love to see her go.
She hates Cersei, and she wants revenge, and she thinks that she deserves power.
You think Dany tries to leave Jon there?
No. John's not staying. No. If anyone stays, it'll be Sansa.
Yeah.
No one's staying.
Somebody has to stay, guys.
She needs another dragonfire.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not Dario Naharis. You can't just leave me behind.
There has to be a Stark in the north.
That's true. Bran. I guess. Bran's not really Bran.
You guys don't
I
think we need him anymore.
King's Landing doesn't have ramps.
They don't!
I'm just gonna ride over that one.
Yeah, same.
Jaden, predictions!
Jeremy, what you got for
us? So it doesn't work if you say Grey Worm's gonna die. That's the most used up prediction ever. Which, by the way, he defied that logic today.
He did.
It's interesting, this whole root and stem thing. Who do they have left? It'll be interesting to do the count of the armies. But we're out of the realm of magic, it appears, of the Night King coming down and a Melisandre and her magic being expressed. And it's back into the world of politics, which was such a big part for so much of the show. And now we're back to the realms of betrayal. And I'm wondering if some people were lining up and getting ready to battle because that enemy was coming on. But you guys know in the preseason show, I made a prediction that within Danny's inner circle, there was a betrayer. And maybe I'll restate that as my prediction. Can I recycle one?
Say it. Let's hear it.
I think Missandei might be a betrayer. Everything has been too easy along the way with her, between her and Danny. And I think there were some events like the evacuation of Casterly Rock and the perfect position of the Euron Greyjoy fleet to take out the leadership of Dorne, et cetera. So I think that betrayal could be revealed soon.
Okay. Hesitantly predicted. Jeremy Dan, Missandei's a betrayer. Kristen,
it's bold.
It's a bold move, Cotton. We'll see how it plays out. Kristen predicting that Sansa will rule the North and AK.
Well, not maybe rule, but stay there and get things in order.
Okay.
Sansa's
stay behind.
Sansa's bringing her butt to King's Landing. There's no way this girl...
She's backpedaling a little bit.
No. There's no way this girl is going to miss out on one of the greatest wars of our time, aside from, obviously, the Long Night and this war, but...
And she knows
Sansa.
Sansa
knows Cersei in a way that no one else does, and this is the time that everyone should be listening to Sansa, including Dany. I think we're going to see another... Even though in the preview scene, we see Dany, you know, raising her goblet and saying we're going to have this war with Cersei. I do believe... I know, where's the pimp cup? Silent P. Raise it up. I think that this is the time where Dany, if she's smart, will depend on the people that know Cersei the best. That would be Sansa, Jaime, and Tyrion. To that point, I do think that Jaime will die at the hands of Cersei. A little different than Kristen. Kristen's saying it's going to be Arya. I think it's going to be Cersei. I think we're going to really see what it means to have Cersei have no children and have no... The only thing ruling Cersei is power.
So Jaime's dead. Cersei's dead.
Yes. And I will say, don't forget about Yara.
They kill each other?
Don't forget about Yara and the Iron Islands.
They're
I think that she's going to come in to fight with the Golden Company, and there's going to be some war on the ships.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to seeing it. My prediction is Sansa and Tyrion are getting married or staying married. I don't know. I want them together. I'm shipping them. That's my prediction.
Are they annulling the annulment of the annulment of the annulment?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's already annulled.
We'll have to find out next week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching. My name is Ryan Malotti. You can find me everywhere at Ryan Malotti. To my left.
Hi guys, I'm Anna Kay. Thanks for being here. Stay in our live chat throughout. We'll be reading comments. You guys can find me on Instagram at Anna Kay Thomas.
Jeremy.
I'm Jeremy Dan. I am hiding.
I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, and you can follow me at Cinematic Escape. Always a pleasure speaking with you guys. Can't wait to read your comments.
Cinematic Escape. Thank you so much for joining here at the AfterBuzz TV studios for Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week. Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dohaeris.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.